Right. Oh, yes, we are live. I want to welcome you to this session. It's a very strong voice today here. I hope you guys are having fun and enjoying the conference. Is that the case? Can I hear a round of applause? All right. You know, it was really neat to see all the devices that you guys are getting. That's pretty cool. You know, I was actually, I haven't gotten a chance to play with some of them. I was asking some of my friends, can I borrow it? Let me play with it, but I'll get to it a little bit later. So, hello, I am Israel Ilerio, and I'm a program manager in the IE team. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about the new web technologies you can use to build, immerse, and modern experiences in Windows 8.1. So, when we say that Windows is advancing the web by introducing new platform capabilities, what do we really mean? Right, sounds pretty, but what does it really mean? What it means is that in the same way we did Windows 8, we're continuing to move forward the web by introducing new platform capabilities that allow you to create new experiences and better integrate your websites with Windows. So I'm going to start by talking about our continual commitment to the web, which I know some of you have heard some skepticism. But it is there, and there's a commitment, continual commitment to the web, and also what are the really cool things that we're doing. And this is where I'm going to go ahead and get this whole front row cheering, right? Because we talked to them, and yeah, they're there for a reason, right? They reserve seats. So they're going to go ahead and work with me on this a little bit, right? And along the way, we're going to show you plenty of demos, right? Because that's really what you come to see. What are all the capabilities? What I want you to know is that this is an overview session. So a lot of the things that we're going to be covering, we're going to be covering really fast because there's a lot of stuff. And my goal is that you will be able to go to the following sessions that we'll have today, immediately after this one, and after that one, and also tomorrow and the rest of the week. So you can see in more detail how you can make all of these new cool things a reality on your sites and actually get them working for you. Now, what do we mean by a continual commitment to the web? As we demonstrated when we introduced Windows 8, the web platform continues to be an integral part of Windows. Using web standards, you're able to deliver interoperable experiences that really work between your websites and apps. The whole goal of us is that you can use the same technologies no matter where you're at, whether it's a Windows Store app that you're building or a site. And when I mean a site, I mean a site that runs on any browser, right? A web standard site. Now, the goal of it is that you can use your web expertise to also build Windows apps and reuse assets between your websites and apps. Even more, using technologies in the Windows space, you'll be able to create this immersive experience between your sites and our shell. And this would allow your websites to feel more like applications. All of this is backed by our commitment to deliver a ubiquitous web platform across all of the devices that run IE. So when we look at what's new in the platform, we have a lot of stuff that we're going to be drilling down on. But we're going to start with professional quality video. Then we're going to be talking about secure content, and in there we're going to talk about encryption and what kind of new capabilities we're adding to the platform for you to be able to encrypt things. Then we're going to talk about immersive graphics, and yes, as we mentioned earlier today, WebGL, right? Which is pretty exciting. Are you guys pretty excited about WebGL? Why, come on, you got to be excited about that, right? So we'll talk about that and we'll show you, and there'll be a session that will follow up that one of my compatriots is going to be demoing later today. We'll continue with new ways in which you can interact on your website. You can have your website interact with a device. And then we'll talk about investments that we've done in the layout area and different refinements and a couple of more things. So let's start with professional quality video. Today, when I think of premium quality video, one of the main services that I think of is what? Netflix, right? And in the past, when I was using Netflix, One of the drawbacks was that I had to install a plugin to really be able to get it working, right? And this would kind of take away from that immersed experience that I wanted to create, that immediate experience and self of gratification when I go to the website and I just want to start playing content right away, right? I had to go in and install the plugin, and there were some dependencies that I had to take, and in some cases, if it didn't work because I had an installation failure, it was a mess. But now, with the collaboration that we've been doing with Netflix, I'm happy to say that we are going to be delivering a plugin-free experience that works on Windows 8.1, not only for Netflix, but for everyone else. Especially though, we've been working with Netflix to make this possible. So there should be a blog that I believe the Netflix team is going to be putting out, in which it will show you today that you will be able to take those devices that you have, install Windows 8.1 in them, go to the Netflix site, and start using this brand new beta service that they're introducing today, which is really, really cool. And I'll demo it now. So let's go ahead and switch and show you what it looks like. All right, so here what I did is I went in into the Netflix site, I logged in. When I logged in, my device was authenticated as belonging to me. And from there, there was some key exchanges that were able to allow me to play premium content. Then I ended up searching for House of Cards. After I got to the House of Cards here, you can see the different episodes for season one. I started already watching one while you guys were coming here, right? So I'm gonna go ahead and show you one of my favorite snippets. And notice the important part about this, which is that we're actually playing this without any plugin.
The office of President of the United States, that I will faithfully execute the office.
Power is a lot like real estate. It's all about location, location, location. The closer you are to the source, the higher your property value. Centuries from now, when people watch this footage, who will they see smiling just at the edge of the frame?
So help me God.
This is one of my favorite parts. So now, actually, before we do anything with that, let me do the right-click test, right? And you can see that it's just the browser. It's the video element in the browser, right? So let's actually go back to the presentation, and let's go into the details of it and what technologies made this possible. We'll start with media source extensions. MSC is a web standard for delivering adapted streaming to the web without requiring plugins. And just as a side note, when I talk about the different web standards that we're looking to implement, what I mean is that we're working with the W3C, which includes people like Netflix, includes people like Chrome or Google, includes people like Firefox and other people. So these are technologies that we're looking to adopt across a wide range or group of people, right, and companies to make this ubiquitous across, right, and standard across all of them. So without MSC, what normally you would see is that as your video was streaming, this big long file, you have to make these pauses in the video playback experience, which would be awkward at times because you're kind of just there waiting for the video to load and your network was saturated and slow, right? And it was just not a pleasant experience. Now with MSC, when playing a movie over the web, you'll notice at times that the quality of the video changes while the movie's playing. Now this is done on purpose, it's not a mistake. And the goal of this is to allow you to enjoy an uninterrupted video experience that takes into account network bandwidth changes. You will use MSC when you want to deliver an uninterrupted video experience that is adaptable to networks that fluctuate. Like for example, when I happen to be at Starbucks, or when I happen to be even at home, right? Because my kids might be watching something and my network bandwidth just went down, right, in another room. So as you can see in this diagram, this technology allows you to define a media source that will be used in conjunction with a video tag to play movie segments. You use JavaScript to pick the source buffers you want to play based on the quality of the network you are using and the number of frames that are being dropped. And that's what allows you to create this nice, smooth experience. Another technology that makes this possible is encrypted media extensions, EME. And that's another web standard for delivering protected media to the web without requiring plugins. This is a technology that allows you to deliver DRM video content directly from the web. If you are the producer of premium content, or you are responsible for delivering it, what you would do is that you would use this technology to deliver it securely. As you can see from the diagram, this technology provides the handshake necessary between the browser and the media server to exchange the media keys necessarily to not only deliver, but also view the DRM content in a secure fashion via the video element without having to install any plugins. Together, these technologies, both EME and MSC, provide the foundation for playback of MPEG-DAT streams and thus deliver professional video quality experience that you come to expect from premium content providers like Hulu, like Netflix, and even YouTube. Oh, by the way, at 3 o'clock in the next following session, there will be a detailed talk about building media streaming apps and sites without plugins using MPEG-DAT. So if you're more interested in this, there'll be a talk this afternoon about this. Another technology that is sort of taken for granted, if you would, is full screen, the full screen experience. And full screen APIs is another web standard that allows any HTML element to occupy the full screen area of a window. You normally see these type of support when you're looking at your video element, as you can see in this picture, or even when you're looking at photo sites, when you can enlarge them to take the full size on the screen. The cool thing about this technology is that it's not limited just to the image tag or the video tag. It can be used on any HTML element. And that allows you to focus the attention of your users to a specific task in the page. One more web standard we're implementing is TTML SDP. And with TTML SDP, it gives you the ability to provide a format, a delivery format for captions. Also allows you to position those captions and format the captions accordingly. With this technology, you can support up to 8 different font types. And you can see here different fonts. You can see italics. You can see different colors on the fonts. You can enable captions to be placed anywhere in the screen, as I'm going to show you in the next demo. And as you can also see here in the screenshots, you can emphasize captions by changing not only the font size, but their color, edges, and opacity. And you can even change the back color on the window that is holding the captions. And in addition to that, you can even change how the captions themselves are being placed in the screen or delivered, whether it's going to be in a roll-up fashion or one word at a time or any of those. So let's actually see a demo.
You might not remember us.
You can see how the captions are being placed at the bottom. And then they're going to go ahead and switch to the left.
Generation Y.
And they're going to be doing using different colors.
Yo-yo.
But not only that, I can go ahead and show, go from a pop-up captions to roll-up captions.
Square. Desktop folders had
or even to, and notice that there's this sort of
there is only
different
one
style
network,
here in the background.
But most of your friends died.
Or I can go ahead and go
the only
and show
in your pocket
this sort of paint-on captions as they go.
Until that
so you'll see. Every time they say a word, it just keeps getting added. Right.
Not a picture.
And the nice thing about this is that you can take advantage of this, and I definitely recommend you seeing this video, although it dates me a little bit. So let me go ahead and close it real quick. The nice thing about this is that it gives you the flexibility to be able to place and format your captions in whatever style matches with your video. In the area of perf and power, we've also made some improvements. The way you download these media sources that we've been talking about normally is via XHR. So in order to improve the performance of the experience, we define a way in which you can specify that the XHR connection you are establishing should be diskless, which reduces the disk writes that are part of the standard media caption execution. So normally what would happen if you look at the picture on the left is that from the web, I would download some kind of stream file that would go into the cache and it would be stored in the cache. And from there, I would then play it via IE. Now, with this diskless mode, what we're able to do is that now we have the caching happening in memory, which avoids the writes that go to disk, making the whole streaming experience a lot smoother and more efficient. In the side of audio, we're able to offload audio for adaptive streaming connections. What that means is that the audio is automatically offloaded to hardware to increase power efficiency in your device, thus increasing the overall power savings of our media playback pipeline. So as you can see in the right diagram, normally what would happen is I would go from the web, go to IE, and then play, and continue to do that routine over and over to go ahead and get the media down. Now, because the adaptive streaming has a stream that I'm processing, I can go ahead and move that and go directly from the web to the hardware and not require that additional execution cost. So what about security? We talked about security and we talked about encryption earlier, right? So let me actually show you a quick demo. And this particular demo, all I'm going to do is I'm going to load an image. I'm going to go ahead and put a password. And then I'm going to encrypt that particular image with a cryptographic hash that is generated from that password and from which I then create a key. And that key will be used to encrypt and decrypt the content. So to the extent that my password is the same, the cryptographic hash that is generated should be the same, which means that the key that I generate should be the same, which should allow me to encrypt and decrypt the mechanism, the content equally. So let's go ahead and say the first thing I want to do is encrypt, continue. I'm going to load my default image. Ooh, a surface. I'm going to go ahead and put now my very secret key that I'll let you see. 1, 2, 3, 4. I go ahead and I hit start, and from there, I'm going to now save this content to my hard drive. So it goes, it's called defaultpicture.jpg, parentheses 1, because I was already doing one earlier. So now, to make sure that you understand that I'm not keeping any state, I'm going to kill the browser, right? So there's no state being kept in the browser at this point. I'm going to start again, go to the same site, and I'm going to select now decrypt. I'm going to go browse for this guy, open it, load it, and now I'm going to put a different password. I'm going to go ahead and put an extra number 5. An honest mistake, right? Also, doesn't have to be that everybody wants to hack you. Right, just an honest mistake. From there, I'm going to go ahead and try now. And when I click on start, bad guy, busted, right? Okay, so my bad. I was done. Didn't want to be a bad guy. I'll just do 1, 2, 3, 4. And when I do that, now it decrypts, right? So this shows you the power that we're now putting into the browser with regards to this encryption and decryption mechanisms. So let's go ahead and see what makes this possible. Web crypto is a web standard API that allows me to generate cryptographically random numbers, create hashes, generate and verify signatures, encrypt and decrypt data. In addition, I'm able to define a mechanism for web applications to generate their own keys and manage the key material. Notice that I set a web standard that is being included, created, right? That means we're not out there to go ahead and be mean people or anything, right? Or do bad things to the web. We're here working with Chrome, with Google, with Firefox, and all of our other competitors to make sure that we have an open web in which capabilities like this can be used for legitimate purposes. Now, the beauty of our implementation is that the key material is hidden from the end user, so they cannot replicate the experience directly on other devices. So when you think of the keys that we're generating, you can imagine that somebody can say, oh, I'm going to hit F12, see the development tools, debugger, grab that key, copy it somewhere else, and replicate the experience there. Well, no, we don't allow that to happen, right? We actually keep the key material hidden so that you cannot go ahead and do it in an easy way, like F12, and replicate that experience. Now, further, you can use this technology when you want to unwrap keys from the server. So imagine I'm actually sending a key from the server that I want to keep pristine to the client without exposing the key material to end users. You can even use it to authenticate client devices without the need to deploy certificates from the server. By the way, this is how Netflix was doing to authenticate the device and create individual content sessions using this technology. The nice thing is that using these technologies, your users are able to access and view DRM documents and protect content using encryption and decryption. In addition, you can authenticate client devices without having to incur the cost of expensive certificates. Now, here's a quick brief look at all of the different algorithms that we support that are part of this release. Give you a quick 10 seconds to digest all of these while we now move to the really cool part, which is the immersed graphics part, right? And yes, as we said earlier, we're going to be releasing WebGL. So this is really exciting. Let me actually show you a demo. And in this particular demo, I'm going to date myself a little. Again, by showing you some of my really cool shoes that I used to wear when I was growing up, right? Now they call it retro, so I don't feel bad because it's not old shoes, they're just retro, right? But you can see how we're using WebGL to create this 3D object in space and be able to apply different types of vertex and pixel shaders to it. Now, one of the cool ones here, and more impressive, is my particle visualizer, which basically not only does it show me the 3D model, it allows me to interact with it. So I can use my mouse and move things around. It's really, really cool. You get dizzy after a while. All right. So let's actually go and look at the specifics of our WebGL implementation. WebGL is a web specification based on OpenGL ES2 that defines a low-level 3D graphics API to use pretty much on your sites. And like we said, yes, it is true. We are going to deliver a complete, robust, secure, and fast WebGL implementation. However, today we're delivering a developer preview as part of this release that you will get, with enough functionality to get you started, experiment, run tutorials, and showcase really cool demos. With this implementation, you can get started right away learning WebGL. And if you haven't really experimented with this technology, you would ask yourself, when do I really ever want to use WebGL? Well, really you use it when you want to create unique 2D and 3D experiences by programming directly to the GPU, or when you want more granular control over what your graphics pipeline gives you for 2D and SVG, or in some cases, when you want more effective ways of creating pixel shaders and vertex shaders. So what about security, right? Because we made a big deal about security. All right, so when we look at Our goal is to be the most secure platform for developing WebGL applications. I noticed that in my previous slide, I also talked about security, which is something we are emphasizing. So what are we doing with regards to security? Well, we've already worked with the web community to address our security concerns on earlier versions of the WebGL spec. In addition, our implementation eliminates many of the security concerns by applying smart limits to the shader functionality that we actually deliver in Box. And using hardware acceleration on verified safe drivers and hardware components. So that's how we're actually addressing these. Later today, there's another talk, like I mentioned earlier, about hyper-fast graphics with WebGL. Definitely recommend that you attend that session to get a deeper insights into these. All right, so yes, we haven't forgot about you Canvas guys, right? Or gals out there, right? So it's not just about WebGL. We definitely continue to work on making our whole graphics pipeline more effective. And to that, we've been working with our partners to identify new features in the latest Canvas 2D. Now, what we're finding out is that today we're seeing an emergence of retro-style games like the ones you normally see in Atari games, right? And to support this pixelated effect that you see in these games will allow you to change the scaling algorithm from bilinear interpolation to nearest neighbor algorithm. You do this by setting the MS Image Smoothing Enable property to false. In addition, for those of you who are building applications that require maps, we introduce support for dashed lines. Now you can define a set of group segments to which you can apply dashed lines to and have better graphics like the ones you see in the middle. Another improved area is the ability to define multiple fill rules. We enhance our support in this area by adding even odd filling rules in addition to the existing non-zero winding rules that we have. In Windows 8.1, we're supporting DDS image format in your Windows Store apps. Unlike other image formats that need to be decoded in the GPU first, DDS uses almost no CPU decode time, thus allowing you to directly load the GPU to the GPU, using your hardware more effectively. Use it for background images to reduce your GPU memory usage up to 87.5%. It's almost like being able to load instantaneously your background, which is really fast. However, when you're using this type of technologies, we want to make sure that you test your assets in the format to ensure that there are no artifacts. Also, we suggest that you use this type of format for only in-package images, as it is not compressed, and using it over the wire could actually have some lag time. So what about these really cool new rich user interactions that I was talking to you about? Let's actually see a demo. All right, so now, in this particular demo, what you normally see is that I have, via WebGL, able to create these new types of panoramas. Pretty interesting, right? You normally use your mouse to move around. No big deal. But now what I'm going to do, and hopefully this will work with all these wires, I'm going to actually use the device itself. Now, how cool is that, huh? Look at that. And now I can go even all the way 360 here, assuming the cables allow me to, and create new experiences for not only your apps, but also your websites that allow you to interact. So you can imagine how many times you actually seen pictures like this in a website, and you want to be able to really get there and see how it moves. And instead of having to use your mouse because it's kind of awkward, now with your device, you're able to do that. And also with these technologies, you notice that as I'm moving things to the side, it keeps its ratio, right? It's landscape or portrait, which is really important because you don't want to go ahead and disrupt the experience by changing and swiping and moving around. So let's go ahead and see what technologies make this possible. Let's start with screen orientation APIs. Screen orientation APIs is a web standard that allows you to lock the screen orientation of the device to landscape or portrait. You use this functionality when you want to stop the application from being affected by the natural user movement of the device. So as you saw, as I was moving it landscape and portrait and moving it around, you wanted to keep it a fixed view. Another technology is device orientation, which is another web standard that allows you to read gyroscope and accelerometer data from the device. You can use this functionality when you want the user to interact with the application by using the physical orientation of the device, like I was doing when I was moving things around with the device itself, right? In addition, we've updated our pointer event implementation, improve the performance in the areas of scrolling and zooming, and provide new support for device fixed elements. Now, when you zoom, elements can keep their predefined aspect ratio without being impacted by the zooming factor, which is a real big benefit. So what about the layout refinements that we talked about? This release, we're updating our Flexbox implementation to the latest W3C specification. Again, to be more standards compliant. Also, we've introduced support for border image, which defines a 9-grid approach for scaling graphical borders via CSS properties. And let me actually show you a quick demo of that. Are you guys enjoying this or no? It's just, you guys sound a little, okay. All right, yes? All right, got it. All right, I like that. All right, let's actually show you the border image. In here, you can see I am actually using, I'm using the border image to be able to define the artifacts that need to be drawn here in each one of these, giving me a feel for this rich buttons. So I'm, in this particular demo, taking advantage not only of the border image, but also of the full screen APIs to show you. So as I keep going deeper into it, you can see how the borders themselves become more alive, and I'm able to scale them as I continue to grow, to the point where when I actually grow all of this, I can change different borders, and the aspect ratio of the borders are preserved because of the 9-grid implementation that we're following. And then you can go back. All right? Cool. So let's go. Another feature, in order to support Asian markets, which displays information vertically, we're introducing horizontal vertical text support. This provides you the ability to display multiple horizontal characters in the space of a single glyph when you're using vertical writing modes. To kind of give you some context of this, you would normally use this on EPUB scenarios when you want to show dates, times, and mix different Western characters or acronyms or names together with this sort of vertical flow. Now, having this support is almost equivalent to going to a website and seeing everything on capital letters, right? And you kind of get it, you read it, but it's almost like if somebody was shouting at you, right? It just doesn't quite convey the smooth experience of the site. Now, with this new capability, you can create Japanese text the way your users expect it to consume it, or Korean text. Now, all of these new layout and editing capabilities have been enhanced by a new F12 experience that provides you with more control and information about your styles. For example, now you don't have to refresh the DOM to see the dynamic changes that happen. Also, we display CSS shorthand information and inline styles directly on the style pane. We also provide improved capabilities for adding and editing CSS properties by giving you better IntelliSense support. You can even query using CSS selector rules to get around and get information. Now, for you Twitter fans out there, we're going to be tracking the hashtag F12 tools for customer tweets on our DevTools. So if you're a really big Twitter fan, make sure you include that hashtag F12 tools so we can track it. Now, tomorrow we'll have a talk on inspecting and debugging using IE's new F12 developer tools. So I really recommend that you go there and look at those, especially for all those Chrome fans out there that I know we were talking about earlier. And definitely you see that you like these very much. So actually, let me show you a demo to kind of get you excited about this. All right, so actually, let's go ahead. You know, I've been not paying attention to my IE desktop. Let's actually go ahead and show it here. All right, so in here, what you see is this new horizontal vertical layout. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick one of these elements, right-click, and inspect the element. Here are the new tools. And in there, you can see how I can pick one, like that one. And you can see the new property that we were talking about, the MS Text Combine Horizontal, which allows me to combine the horizontal together with the vertical alignment. In addition, you can see here the margins, the shorthand notation of the margins. And I can expand them and see all of the specific details of each one of those margins. I'm also able to see different classes you define, and not only what we recognize as being specific properties, CSS properties, but CSS properties that are supported in other browsers like Dash WebKit. You can see those. You can see the ones that you commented out, and you're able to interact with those. Furthermore, I'm able to use the class selectors to be able to look for things. So if you notice there, there's what's highlighted says class equals TCH. So I can go ahead and say .tch. And when I do that, it automatically shows me the different elements that actually have that. I can even go one step further and say, hey, what if I want to do ID selectors? Well, I can go ahead and type haiku border, and I can get to it right away, right? And the nice thing is that, as you would expect, because these are CSS selectors, they are case sensitive. So I go here, and it doesn't work, right? So this is one of the new capabilities that we have. So hopefully this is enough of a teaser to get you to that talk, so you can see the rest of the other cool capabilities that we have there. So let's go back. All right, so in the area of editing, we've improved our clipboard support. Let me remind you what it used to be. So when I would go to applications like Word, Google Picasa, Paint, any of those, and I would try to copy something and go to a content editable area and paste, right? Normally nothing would happen. Or if anything happened, it was something weird, right? So you didn't really get the experience that you expected where the picture would show up, which is what you wanted because you were pasting it. So now you're able to directly copy paste images from any of those programs like Word, Paint, Google Picasa. We do this by reading the source attribute directly from the clipboard and passing that information to your HTML element. In addition, we provide a new API that allows you to control the pasting of those images as data URIs. Furthermore, you can even use our conversion type for changing data URIs to blobs and then integrate those blobs and consume them by other APIs that we support in the web platform. We also provide a conversion API that you can call on each file object to retrieve a base64 encoding of the content of that file as a data URI, or just simply retrieve the local source attribute. Furthermore, we've improved our undo capabilities by providing you an API that defines the beginning of an undo operation in which you can include all of your undo statements or the statements that you want ultimately to be undone via script, And then you can signal the end of that operation. Normally you do this with what we call MS begin undo unit and MSN undo unit. And after that, you would call the MS clear undo stack to take all of that and as a unit, remove it. So let me actually show you a quick demo on that. Back here. Editing. Back here. So now, this is my content editable area. I'm going to take an image from here. Control C, Control V, what you would expect, right? And then I can add some text. And I can take another image. Paste that, right? Which is pretty nice by itself, but then I can say, nah, you got the wrong images. Oh, man, no. I should be able to just undo this whole thing. So I'm going to go ahead and hit Control-Z, Control-C, and Control-C. Pretty cool, right? And it gives you all that power, and you have all of that control to be able to define what those boundaries of undos are that you can identify. So what about shell integration? That's another area where we made a lot of improvements now for IE11 and Windows 8.1. When we first introduced PinSites back in IE9, right, people were asking us, you guys, people, developers, right, were asking us, hey, how can we continue to update those tiles so that people can keep coming back, right? Because the whole idea is to continue to attract that traffic. Right? So with pin size, this actually got people's sites to be visited more often. But even further, you wanted to have a mechanism in which you can, in some kind of a fashion, keep those tiles alive, right? So that you can inform users of these new capabilities that they have. So one of the things that we did is that now the content on your tiles can be dynamically displayed and updated via RSS feeds. And in addition, you have the ability to define different type of tile sizes you can use to display this information, which is really cool, and I'll show you in a minute what I mean by that. This really gives you the ability to really provide more visibility and have your brand be part of this whole start screen experience. In addition, you can even associate high-res icons to the favorites and recent sites area. So let's actually see what that looks like. So if I go back here, I've actually pinned a couple of sites, and some that you will recognize, like MSN, and you can see how the headlines just continue to show up on their own, right? The RSS feeds. We're able to see in Bing what's trending and other information that shows up. You can see how I pinged the Atari site here at the bottom. The IE test drive site, which, by the way, this is where I've been getting all of my different demos that I've been showing to you, right? So you can see all of those from there. And in addition, I'm able to even see the Channel 9 one. So this is really easy to incorporate, and there will be another talk that we'll have next, right after this, in this particular room, that will talk about lighting up your sites on Windows 8.1, which you can find out how easy it is to make this happen. So in summary, we're providing you new standards that can be used across our extensive web platform in both IE and Windows apps. Our goal is that you'll reuse your web development knowledge when you are looking to develop these types of apps and create Windows applications with that knowledge. In addition, we want you to extend your sites to create more engaging experience in Windows and make your sites feel more like apps. Thus, all of this is available for you today, and you can go ahead and start using it right away. So as we mentioned, there's all kinds of different talks that you should go ahead and attend if you want to get more information on each one of these. These are all also will be available online if you're planning on accessing other ones. But besides that, that's pretty much it for me. Thank you so much.